right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Paul, as always, joined by my good man, my good partner, Mr. Brendan Veman. How are you doing today, sir? Trading these crazy markets.
Yeah, man, trading these crazy markets. Crypto's doing great. Traditionals are doing great. And so what better thing to talk about than the working behind the scenes? And that's exactly what we're going to get to do today.
Yeah, man, this is going to be just one of those episodes I've been waiting. I've seen it on my calendar for like a month, and I'm like, I can't wait for this one. Wintermute, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody knows Wintermute. If you're a serious trader investor in the space, one of the largest, if not maybe the largest, OTC desk market-making firm in crypto, these are some of the best and brightest, and we are graced by the presence of Katrina Hanush, who's the Director of Business Development and Partnerships at Wintermute. So, Katrina, thank you for taking your time to speak with us today.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And then did I get that right, that Wintermute is, you know, are you guys the largest market making firm, and how would you kind of measure that?
That's a good question. Usually, you know, not actually our number one goal, and that's actually what keeps us, you know, our tracking consistently our performance is our market share. So we obviously can see our market share across all of the largest venues. We see what the exact split percentages is. And we can see that a lot of the US venues, we do double digit percentages, 20, 30, 40%. And we know we're the largest market makers. On a few others, it's still single digits, but probably, you know, sometimes there's questions asked whether all of their reported volumes are genuine volumes. But yeah, that's the fun and games in crypto. So yeah, for us, we know we're one of the largest, that's for sure. And in terms of the market share, we're consistently tracking, and we also have KPIs internally to hit specific number as to global spot volume. That would be, you know, the specific metrics for our trading team here to make sure that we're consistently performing at the levels expected.
Incredible.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
And before we dive into your background, which is really exciting, I think a lot of people who watch the show, they've heard the term market maker. And it's always kind of like those guys, oh, the market maker's suppressing the price, or oh my gosh, there's a big bid from the market maker. You know, tell us what a market maker is. What's the function of it? And kind of what's the business model?
Yes, very good. The market maker is essentially a trading strategy, right? We trade as a delta neutral strategy, meaning we don't take directional risk or exposure. Essentially, we are providing a two-way quote, bids and asks on any venue, including, you know, very, very competitive top of the book, as well as, you know, the depths of the liquidity. So market making is essentially providing even in regulated markets, is providing a two-way quote where you're a buyer to every seller and a seller to every buyer. That's the summary of it. And I guess from our perspective, the main thing that we want and that we are building is to make markets transparent, efficient, and liquid. So liquidity is a metric you can look at as a measure how easily you can exit or enter a position in the market without, you know, slippage, without necessarily, you know, having any market impact or sending a market signal externally to other participants.
And when you think about Wintermute as like this trading strategy, you know, I think a lot of people are familiar with hedge funds. Where, you know, a hedge fund raises a bunch of money, they go and they trade. Sometimes they do, like you said, delta neutral. Sometimes they take long positions, short positions. Sometimes they're long only. But does Wintermute have outside capital that they raise from investors? Or is this just like, you know, a bunch of guys and gals who pooled together their money that all work together and are trading their own money? How does that work?
Yeah, that's essentially the firm was founded in 2017. And at the time, it was actually, you know, proprietary capital of our founders, where I think, you know, our founder and CEO, Evgeny, I think he was saying it's very openly, he was just bored of the TradFi markets and he wanted to test the markets or test the same, you know, high frequency market making strategies in our, you know, in crypto, just because there was more volatility, more opportunity, more interesting things to do. And I think initially, the setup was literally, you know, a kitchen table with a few quants and developers working on our, you know, setting it up. And of course, with some time, our, you know, again, crypto being very inefficient, where, as you know, if you want to trade anything on an exchange, you obviously have to pre-fund, you have to move inventory. We had to raise some funds for some of the very, very large VCs who supported us with a raise a few years later, you know, 2019, which was very, very tough. And ever since, I think there was an article in Forbes actually covering a very successful 2021 bull run where, you know, our, yes, where we were very successful and we have our made, you know, our own capital. So right now we're a 1 billion balance sheet. Half of that is net equity. The rest is our trading capital that we utilize on a daily basis. And we essentially churn it over multiple times per day. So, you know, we trade 5 to 10 billion on a daily basis. So again, going back to the market share, yes, you know, if the spot volume is around 50 billion per day, we're a significant proportion of that.
Wow. And I mean, you worked in finance for a long time before this too, before you were even at Wintermute. So I'm kind of curious, like, what put crypto on your radar and piqued your interest in the first place?
I was there at the time, 2021, actually Wintermute reached out to me and there was quite a lot of other, you know, crypto firms who were reaching out via LinkedIn and asking if I would be interested to join. I will be completely honest, I'm not an OG. Embarrassingly, I was very late to the party and I felt like if I don't make the move, I'll be a complete dinosaur. So for me, it was a way, you know, a learning opportunity, definitely a very steep learning curve. I've spent 15 years in traditional finance on sales and trading. And I guess, you know, my personality gets very quickly bored if I do the same thing very, you know, so I tended to change my career path every 2-3 years. I started in the structured product, then I moved into private banking. Then I came back into sales and trading on the precious metals. I was a precious lady, you know, the only lady on the floor.
Then the I moved precious lady.
Yeah, and then I moved into FX, and you know, and stayed in FX, and I worked for a high frequency trading firm, and then I worked for a venue. So I kind of had experience of, you know, buy side, sell side, and the venue, which is really great, and it gives you a very good understanding of the market structure. But essentially, at some point, I realized it's as simple as, well, you want to trade FX? Do you want my API, or do you want my platform, right? Single dealer platform or multiple dealer platform. It's a very vanilla commoditized product. So for me, crypto seemed like just this new exciting role where, well, it's either I go and do PhD or, you know, write a book, or I go and learn a completely new industry. That was my thinking at the time. And I'm really glad I did. It's just such a versatile industry that I never get bored. You know, I've been doing it for now 2+ years. And I think I can imagine doing it for another 10 years because every day is so different.
You haven't lost interest yet.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, working in the space for 15 years, you have to make a lot of connections doing that. So do you ever call some of your former connections or coworkers or partners up and just get their thoughts on the crypto market now? Because it's a completely different space. I mean, we're talking when crypto and Bitcoin was just a thought when you were beginning, and I'm sure that their opinions and their thoughts on the whole industry has waxed and waned a lot over the years. So like, do you ever call them back up and kind of found anything like significant or interesting along those lines?
Yeah, I guess it may be the other way around. They're calling me.
They're coming to you. That's even better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of feel, you know, again, you know, I have a lot of, you know, friends who work in banks. And actually, my husband was working in a bank and he made a move into crypto, you know, 9 months after I joined. He probably was feeling that I'm having too much fun and I'm just doing a lot of work just for, you know, because I'm interested. I'm, you know, doing the moon hours, I think. So, yeah, usually it kind of seems like, you know, many are interested and they kind of feel like they understand, but to me, it feels like sometimes they just scratch the surface, right? They maybe get access to, you know, some very good kind of bank reports, which, you know, provide proper research and analytics, or they may be reading Bloomberg or kind of, you know, your conventional kind of TradFi sources, which I think give you a kind of a sense of what crypto does, but doesn't necessarily, you know, dig very, very deep. So quite often when I speak to them, it feels like, okay, it's like two parallel worlds, right? I think they're interested in the blockchain as a technology, and kind of, I don't think I see banks in general, for instance, or, you know, tier one financial institutions necessarily want to be the users of the technology. They want to be owners, right? So I think a lot of that, of the process on their side, is kind of testing the water, seeing how they can, you know, make their processor more efficient, how they can streamline their, you know, product offering. It's literally kind of almost like this exclusive club where they're trying to build something to be competitive for their own clients. They're not necessarily there to innovate. They just want to make sure that it's compliant, is, you know, approved from a regulatory perspective. Mm-hmm. And then you also have, I guess, more for, you know, open-minded financial institutions who come to us almost for guidelines as to, okay, we want to offer it. How do we do it? How do we go about it? And quite often for them, the question is, again, how do they get compliance approval, right? How do they allow some, you know, from an operational perspective, someone to be able to, you know, eliminate any human errors, which are, you know, can happen. And in TradFi, you have recourse against that. Whilst, you know, in crypto, if someone is sending Ethereum into thin air, it literally disappears, right? The fat finger mistake is not possible to fix. So for many of them, it's kind of, okay, how can we find qualified custodian? How can we, you know, streamline the operations? How we can get the compliance approval? How we can get, you know, regulatory clarity? So I would say this is kind of like the middle, or, you know, the medium niche. And then you also have very, very opportunistic. You have, you know, family offices, maybe hedge fund, who are already very actively trading and almost in a sense might be competing with us, and we welcome that. We want the markets to be, you know, efficient, liquid. We want them to participate so we can hedge against them, right? So I would say those are like three different buckets are of, you know, very, very different type of counterparties that we face. Some of them are kind of asking more for advice and guidance, while others are already actively participating or building and being active both in CeFi and DeFi. So that's quite exciting to see, yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, Wintermute, in some capacity, works with different projects, right? With DAO treasuries that need to kind of manage risk. Could you talk about that process? Maybe, you know, does when a kind of project comes up to you guys, you know, what does that deal look like? What are the objectives there?
Usually, yeah, we would be speaking to different projects here, right? You know, from very, very early on, quite often. So, you know, we have three business lines, right? We're just, again, a pure proprietary trading firm. We don't have a custody. We're not a broker. We're not a venue. We only compete in the single lane provision, which is liquidity provisioning. It's, you know, pricing. We want to be competitive on price. So when we speak to projects, quite often, the first introduction actually might happen through our VC arm. So we have a small VC arm, that's all corporate capital. We don't have external LPs. And they might express a long-term view. That's the only kind of team within Wintermute that has a long-term view. Everything else is delta neutral. Whatever, you know, we're buyer to every seller to every buyer. So quite often the conversation starts there. And then when there's, you know, a discussion about either, you know, we might become strategic investor, and then we want to support that project possibly with, you know, liquidity. For them, it could be, you know, active LPing, passive LPing, liquidity provisioning, passive liquidity provisioning. It can be integration into the DEX. We're actually quite bullish on the RFQ order books and central limit order books on kind of hybrid CeFi, DeFi type of products, because for us, it's quite easy. We can just, not easy, but we can provide liquidity from our pricing engine, do the integration either with the ecosystem or with the chain or with the actual, you know, protocol. So once we have that strategic partnership, it's only natural that when possibly, you know, the token is being launched, they ask, hey guys, could you also support us on the liquidity provisioning on, you know, on for the token itself. So in terms of deals, I would say it's a very strategic approach. For us, it's an opportunity, costs, right? And, you know, resources are always tight, as well as the capital, because we work, we allocate our own capital, and we look at long-term incentives being aligned with those projects. So we are not necessarily trying to compete to win every single deal. We want to work with the biggest and best in our view, projects that are, you know, building something that has product market fit generally for the crypto markets.
Yeah, wonderful. And I know that there is recent expansions, Wintermute expanding into the venture capital world. Are there any, you know, exciting projects or, you know, even, you know, like you said, you know, coming in as, you know, strategic partners that you could talk about and, you know, a little bit of insight on onto your VC arm?
Yes, there, in terms of our VC arm, I mean, we're very segregated in that sense, which I believe is a good thing. Again, you know, coming from my TradFi background, you know, we would always have, you would have to bring someone, you know, over the Chinese wall between, you know, the investment banking arm, I use the advisory on ECM, DCM, M&A versus kind of the sales and trading arm. I would say it's kind of similar approach here, as though we don't necessarily, you know, sign the, you know, bring someone on the Chinese wall, but the discussions and the DD process, due diligence process on the project is quite different. I would say that quite often it's actually their DeFi partnership is what also possibly quite often can pique our VC arm's interest. So longer term investment could be, for instance, they've been doing investment in, say, you know, Cosmos ecosystem because we haven't been integrated yet, but longer term, we believe that's where they're going to be a lot of growth. So now we're actually looking at the Cosmos ecosystem from, you know, DeFi integration perspective because there's a lot of very exciting projects and products that they're building there. So I would say that's the overlap. Otherwise, in terms of exciting new announcement, obviously I wouldn't be able to disclose, but usually it would be, you know, two ways we look at the opportunities. One, is there already an existing project that has significant amount of volume? So we would talk about, you know, hundreds of millions per day. For us, it's worthwhile our time and effort because if you remember the way we make money is just tiny little bips integrated into the spread, right? So for us, being there and winning significant market share means that we can, in a delta neutral capacity, hopefully see some P&L opportunity. And the second part could be the early incentives being offered. And some of them are very transparent. So for instance, we were very early adopters of DYDX as an example, recently of Vertex, where those projects look at their liquidity providers as, you know, they want them to be on the cap table. They want them to be at the table. They want them to have provide feedback, you know, strategic development ideas and help them to shape that product. Because, you know, again, you can choose how to build your product from two different perspectives, right? You can decide, okay, I can build something amazing. It's going to be amazing front-end UI, and there's going to be so many users, and there's going to be so much demand, the supply will follow, right? Whilst others would think, well, I kind of want it to be more as a, you know, as a traditional exchange where you would have dedicated market makers or LPs who are submitting and providing very tight quotes. It's a great trading experience. It's very, very liquid markets. And then because the supply is so good, the demand will come, right? Because, you know, the spreads are comparable to, say, central limit to C5 venues. So for us, it could be either, yes, those transparent early incentives programs or, you know, there could be, you know, different stages where if you integrate very early on, you can earn significant amounts of, you know, native tokens. Or else there could be, you know, possibly some bespoke deals which can be arranged where we have to adhere to specific KPIs, you know, for a longer period. Again, either KPIs could be either uptime, i.e. what would be the percentage of, you know, us consistently providing specific spreads, specific depths over a period of time. So we would have to adhere to them to be able to see those incentives materializing. Hope it
absolutely
makes sense.
No, it's fascinating. And I think everybody, I know I definitely appreciate kind of just the purview here and kind of the insight into how, you know, market making firms work. So really appreciate that. But what were you going to say, Brennan?
Yeah, no, I was going to say it's super interesting to get the perspective of a market maker and what they're looking at, because I'm sure that there's a lot of retail traders out there going, hey, like, I don't pay attention to that, and I probably should now. And so I know that's probably going through a lot of people's heads, but I wanted to transition us to like what's currently happening in the markets and kind of like push the question against you of, you know, are you seeing any kind of increase in like liquidity or interest? Because Wintermute has their hands in like spot trading, OTC, CME futures. And my initial thought here was like the ETFs had to have affected this. And my thought here is it has to have affected it in a positive light. But is that what you're seeing? Like, are you seeing this increase in liquidity and interest on all these different fronts?
Yes, I would say that definitely has been the trend we've been seeing, especially, you know, in January with the launch of their ETF. you know, some days we have done hundreds of millions of, you know, BTC volume as a result. So that was definitely very positive for us.
Wow.
But again, you know, if you think about it, kind of we call them BTC and these are majors, right? And then you have the alts. Actually, we are specializing not just in your top 10, top 20. We're actually, you know, very proud. We can support top 200, top 300 most liquid tokens. So for us, that's where our interest lies. So overall, I would say, the trend is that it's not just BTC. BTC just kind of a little bit of a head and kind of, you know, you can see some tailwinds, but we are seeing a lot more interest overall within the kind of, you know, crypto ecosystem overall. So for us, definitely, you know, the regulatory approval is what gives it a little bit of, you know, that impetus overall. So, you know, a lot of my discussions, even 2 years ago when I would be speaking, you know, again, to my friends from banks would have been very high level, sort of more of a brain dump. They ask a lot of questions over 2 hours and nothing happens, right? There's no real commercial opportunity. Whilst now the discussions I'm having are more kind of, well, guys, can we trade bilateral options with you? Or maybe we are not yet ready to do the custody and, you know, build the whole infrastructure, but could we possibly, you know, trade with you cash settled products like, for instance, CFDs, which is more of a retail broker offering, you know, versus NDFs, which is more of an institutional type of kind of hedging solution for corporates or, again, for financial institutions. So there's definitely a trend where I think by regulatory clarity or at least regulatory approval for BTC ETF, or BTC spot ETF, I think it kind of opens up the doors for those conversations being a little bit more tangible.
Yeah, and I think the best like signal of that is something that you said earlier of you're not going to them. Like all these institutional players, they're the ones coming to you now. So if that's not a good sign that this is happening and that it's having a positive effect, I'm not sure what will be, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely on our side, again, you know, we have three business lines. So it's really curious to see how, you know, we have CFI trading, DeFi trading, and the OTC. So, you know, and actually that's what makes the role very, very exciting and diverse that, you know, any day you could be speaking to a very large tier one bank. We're actually working, you know, on a couple of announcements, you know, or a large regulated, even listed company who are finally realize, you know, it's a good old TradFi principle. You need liquidity, right, for any product to be successful. You can't just, you know, create sort of this, you know, opaque type of product that's only available to OTC. You need to have markets. And because there are no, the market infrastructure is still very, very fragmented, you need to rely on, you know, big, large liquidity providers like ourselves that are registered by the largest regulator, you know, FCA in the UK, have the capitalization, and most importantly, have experience, you know, and infrastructure and automation to deliver on the liquidity. So, yeah, it's quite exciting to see that happening in parallel to having all the DeFi conversations, right, where, you know, there's a lot of innovation happening and a lot of very, very, you know, cool, interesting ideas being discussed on a daily basis where most of my calls, I'm like, can you tell me again, so how does it work? Can you, you know, how exactly is it going to be implemented? Like a lot of it is very, very technical, you know, as opposed to, okay, you know, plain sort of, you know, okay, let's sign in these then start trading bilateral, you know, derivatives, which is also interesting enough, but sort of that's where I think the, you know, extra learning for me is what makes it more exciting.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And, you know, with these ETFs that launched recently, we see a lot of Bitcoin kind of being hoovered up by these ETFs. I mean, like, I think net $500 million a day, roughly, that's kind of being hoovered up. And, you know, I ask myself, you know, where are they getting all this Bitcoin? You know, who's selling here and all this kind of stuff? And I saw an interesting chart, and I kind of just wanted to share it with you just to get your thoughts. It was from a company called Glassnode. So this is not our data, but we're sharing. Somebody tweeted this out, and this is the Bitcoin, you know, the orange line is how many Bitcoin that these OTC desks like Wintermute, how much Bitcoin they own. And you can see that this balance has just been falling and falling and falling. And so as the price continues to go up. And so there's this kind of meme in crypto, like it's a supply side crisis, Bitcoin's fixed asset and all this kind of stuff. But then you look at that and you think, well, man, there. You know, OTC desks are running out of Bitcoin. There's so much buying. You know, do you have any like, you know, thoughts or takeaways on that? You know, is it, you know, maybe just it's bad data and they're mismarking wallets, or is there genuinely just, you know, so much demand and you know, prices will have to go higher because, you know, the higher prices will incentivize more supply for these ETFs to be able to hoover up.
Yes. I mean, I've seen another chart. I don't know if you guys seen it, kind of the ETF aggregated flows since the Bitcoin port ETFs versus the gold, right? And kind of the reverse correlation, which was another very interesting thing to see. So, you know, maybe surprise, surprise, we actually don't mind what the price action is because, you know, we don't hold our BTC as our own inventory. We have a trading inventory. So actually, you know, half, you know, all of our net equity is held in dollars and dollars equivalent. So, you know, everything else we borrow. So for us, the actually underlying price is not as relevant as actually is the action, i.e., you know, what is the price action, whether we're someone is selling or buying. For us, it doesn't affect us. But I think what we have seen as the trends are definitely is that there's a lot of, you know, possibly BTC miners who are looking to sell through the OTC desk, or we, for instance, seeing a lot of their people who may have been smart enough, you know, on the back of their, you know, kind of negative price actions, they had a lot of dry powder, you know, they entered some of the BTC trade and they were waiting for this kind of 45 to 50K levels to possibly sell. So I think kind of that chart is not necessarily representing the picture because there were a lot of, you know, a lot of supply. What is interesting, and I agree with you, obviously with, you know, daily net inflows, I think around, as you said, 500 million or just under it, you probably what we will see, you know, is the daily supply is around what kind of like 900 BTC, right? So like roughly 45 million per day. So, you know, the net ETF demand is like more than 10 times the daily supply. So that will be an interesting, it will be interesting to see, especially after the, you know, Bitcoin halving, how it will impact the price longer term. Because again, the daily supply will be cut to from like 900 BTC to 450 BTC. So, you know, if the ETF inflows are sustained, then the daily demand will become what, 20 times, right? If we do the simple math. But again, for us, we are not holding, you know, we're not producing, we're not, you know, having exposure to BTC in terms of maybe individually some of us do or not, or may or may not. But, you know, as a company, we don't necessarily have any view. And actually, BTC and ETH have always been pretty liquid compared to the alternative, you know, also in terms of doing large size trades. Even when people ask how much can you do, we're like, yeah, easily we can do 100, 150, 200 million on chain. The issue we have is that our banks may only allow us to do 15 million fiat transfer, right, on the back of that transaction. So it's actually the TradFi system that has limits as opposed to anything we can do on chain.
That's wild. Most people, when they think of growth, they're saying, oh, we're limited on all these other places. And the last place that they expect to need to look towards is TradFi and say, that is the limitations here. But I guess that's why a lot of people are in crypto in the first place.
Yeah, of course, TradFi is going to, you know, need permission. That's the whole idea of being a permissionless sort of world, right? I mean, it's our money or our clients' money. We could do with it as we please. Whereas in the traditional markets, you know, everybody's want to put red tape everywhere and it's crazy.
And that's why we're here, right?
That's why we're here.
We're here to change that and to get that information out there. But something cool that I saw was published not too long ago was the WinnerMute 2023 year in review for the OTC markets. And that is one of my favorite things to read. Now, I'm a little bit biased, right? I'm an analyst. I love looking at different kinds of analytics. I just get the bug for it. And so I was reading through this. I just want to kind of go through a couple of the stats that stood out to me and then open the floor up to you. But I mean, man, you all saw weekly OTC trading volume, which stands for over the counter. Trade volume hit an all-time high of over $2 billion. You also saw an increase in the number of counterparties by 98% year over year. You saw a 4x increase in the total over-the-counter trading volume from the first half of 2023 to the second half of 2023. You saw 206 unique assets and 495 pairs traded in the second half of 2023. And then there's just all this other stuff. I mean, you saw growing of share volume from altcoins. And the list goes on. And so I kind of just want to open the floor up to you to kind of talk about like what this is and any other things that stood out to you. The main point that I wanted to make by the metrics that I just saw is that things are looking great. And the crypto market and the blockchain industry is growing on so many different fronts. And you know, these kind of insights are just proof of that.
Yes, very true. You know, we have been working with our product team on how do we put this data together and share it and sort of in there, you know, without disclosing too much data, but sort of so that it's meaningful enough and, you know, worthwhile for people to look at. I think the trend is quite interesting because what you will see also is that actually their, you know, centralized exchanges volumes have been dropping. So whilst ours was growing, you're right, it was like 400% increase in the second half, the centralized exchange spot volume has not been, you know, sustained. It's kind of was quite going lower. So for us, it's just reflecting the trends that are, you know, more of the, you know, remember the institutions are coming. I think it was, you know, the 2022. Now they're finally here. And guess what? They still have the same sort of good old, you know, TradFi approach in terms of risk assessment. They would rather face, you know, an FCA registered, well-capitalized legal entities that they can deal with on a direct basis and say, for instance, maybe an exchange with very opaque financials and KYC processes, right? So I think it's just reflecting the trend of our larger, bigger retail institutional brokers, financial institutions that are now live with us have done the integration. Because again, that takes a lot of time and a lot of, you know, man hours, right, to do the legal, the papering, but also to do the integration to meet the requirements. So we're definitely seeing not just the trend, but now it's kind of all that work is coming to fruition where we win significant market share with them, as I mentioned, you know, close to a half sometimes. So I think those volumes are reflecting the work that we have done as well as the trust that those large institutions are putting into Wintermute generally as a brand and as, you know, a reputable name, as well as just generally our offering, our, you know, is able to add value, i.e. even if we did all of the work and we were not able to compete on prices, no one would trade on those prices, right? So again, going back to the fact that we have to be consistently competitive, we have to consistently track to make sure that we're consistently winning the market share and sustaining it and are able to add value. Otherwise, yeah, no one would trade.
Yeah. And I mean, it has to be good for both internal and external purposes. Because like I said, I'm sure you all are using those metrics to help make all sorts of determining decisions. And people like me get to look at those reports and come to our own conclusions as well. And so I want to like look towards your background here, because you worked in the Forex space. And I'm curious if you ever draw any parallels between like the current development of the crypto markets and maybe previous trends that you've seen over in the Forex markets.
Yes, I come with my FX hat on sometimes, you know, maybe to the annoyance of my colleagues where I try to sort of, you know, keep quiet. But, you know, I sometimes express views. To me, it seems like the market structures looks and feels very much similar to FX. So again, you know, in FX, the way it's, you know, 7.5 trillion daily turnover, right? It's huge. You know, one third of it is derivatives, mainly, you know, forwards and swaps. One third is options. So, you know, two thirds of it is derivatives, the rest is spot. And I think that was a BIS survey, I think last year. So again, looking at that massive market, I think there's still a lot more we can do in crypto. You know, again, we haven't even scratched the surface. But in order to do that, what you require is capital. You require, you know, capital efficient markets with, you know, credit intermediaries, with repo markets, you know, proper KYC processes. And this is something that maybe crypto is still not quite there. And again, maybe going back to the parallels, you know, typically in FX, everything is traded by a prime broker. So you would have, you know, large banks with a huge balance sheet able to allocate capital in order to provide credit lines across different venues. And we are now seeing that. We're seeing, you know, more prime brokers. Some of them, for instance, are, you know, very reputable ones we invested in. Again, in FX, a lot of the volume is traded OTC. Again, you know, we're seeing this trend with Wintermute, even, you know, our last year, 2023 reporting, a lot of it is done OTC. A lot of the trading is also in hedging, and especially, you know, exhaust pipes are other hedging hedge floor is happening on the ECN. ECN is electronic communication network, where you just do the execution and you match, possibly, you know, or via a matching engine. Again, we're seeing a lot more ECNs coming up and a lot more, you know, activity happening there, kind of, you know, starting with a single million dollars, now kind of, you know, more of a $100 million. So I think it will definitely be a trend where we will continue seeing ECNs, we will continue seeing big prime brokers, maybe with additional, you know, injection of risk capital, as well as kind of more of a low latency infrastructure. So again, in effects, low latency is a given, right? People are low latency is not an advantage anymore. You have to have a low latency infrastructure to compete. That's why, you know, there are microwave towers, right? And sort of, you know, even different cool ways to try and, you know, truncate some of the market data. So again, you know, we, for instance, work with FIX 4.4. This is a standard protocol that is, you know, widely used in FX and other markets. But, you know, again, in FX, you would see each and ouch as a protocol being used just to shave off 20% of their, you know, data truncation to be that extra 20% faster, which is interesting. So I think the market will definitely move away from kind of, you know, cloud-based or cloud-based trading to sort of, you know, having cross-connect and trying to shave off not just, you know, seconds or microseconds, but milliseconds, right? That's a game is, you know, race to zero. So there's a lot more to do to make the market kind of more institutionalized and sort of more efficient and liquid and kind of transparent. Because again, when you look at the venues, when I've joined and I was with people calling crypto exchanges, to me, they just look like vertically integrated brokerages, right? You have the custody, the execution, the OTC desk, as well as, you know, their kind of possibly even, you know, borrowing lending book, all under the same umbrella, massive conflict of interest. It just would never happen. And, you know, on a traditional exchange, you have to have segregation of duties. So to me, it seems like that's where the market will move if we really want it to be institutional market.
Yeah, it's crazy how much trading has changed over the years. Like even just over the last like decade or two decades, trading is it's a different game now. And we have access to all these new technologies, which are always supposed to just continue or continually upgrade the space. And one of the questions that I get asked is from my buddies that are in the other sectors. Maybe they're Forex traders, maybe they're stocks traders, maybe they mess in the CME futures market, maybe they do options. The list goes on. They come over to crypto and they're always asking like, hey, how is this different? Do you have any kind of advice for me? And so I'm curious from like your perspective, you know, do you have any advice for these traders who are coming into the crypto markets? Because as it gets bigger and as it gets more well-known, as it gets more liquid, it will attract more traders. So like what kind of advice do you have for them as they're entering into the space maybe for the first time?
My advice is to wear a seatbelt.
There's built-in leverage.
Yeah, I'm glad they're coming to you, right? Because I think there's actually a lot of noise and a lot of froth out there, you know, in terms of, you know, they're obviously some very, very good, you know, sources of information, but you have to really filter. So in terms of, I think sometimes I wonder, you know, if crypto just generally attracts very specific type of personality, you know, someone who is kind of hungry for knowledge and wants a challenge and they kind of want, you know, the place where they constantly, you know, there's innovation happening, they have mental stimulation, there's, you know, solution-driven approach, strategic thinking, you know, put it all together. And then, as you said, you know, with a little bit of, you know, Wild West, you know, it makes it very entertaining mix. But I think in terms of, you know, if they're looking for a career switch, I would say that are, you know, we're seeing actually a lot of big inflow of, you know, CVs we're hiring actually right now. And quite often, you know, I joined, I was lucky, I didn't have any crypto experience. And, you know, I'm still learning on a daily basis. And I don't think you can ever stop in crypto. But if someone is looking to do a career switch, or we are now only taking someone with, you know, relevant experience, or already kind of you have to really prove that you have that experience, and sometimes maybe just, you know, jump the ship and go, you only learn by doing. That's my personal experience, is that just reading about it doesn't really give you a sense of what it is really about. I mean, I think the beauty of the DeFi is that you can actually interact in DeFi in a personal capacity, right? You don't necessarily have to be, you know, an advanced high-frequency trader, or like maybe on a traditional market. In the DeFi, you can learn about many different pools and, you know, many different, have interactions in a private capacity. So I think that's a good thing about crypto. The downside of that there's also a lot of their, you know, acronyms or, you know, a lot of in appropriation of the words being used. So, you know, for instance, when I joined, I couldn't believe some of the words that are being used in crypto. It almost feels like, you know, reinventing the wheel, because I'm like, there's a good term for this, you know, like a basis trade, and people, you know, or, you know, a carry trade, and people trying to explain it in a different way because they've never done it. So I think sometimes you kind of have to try to see or read in between the lines what is actually, you know, kind of people try to build, or, you know, try to innovate. And sometimes it's innovation for the sake of innovation, as opposed to, you know, finding the market product fit. So I would say, yes, if it's the right personality and they have or can gain some, you know, personal experience in a personal capacity, sort of trading, learning, staking, you know, providing liquidity, I think it's a good first step. But I'll say, you know, they need to have, as you say, maybe take off their rose tinted glasses and actually get to see that not everything what it seems to be. It's a little bit like Alice in Wonderland, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels like a different different market altogether.
That was like, yeah, an incredible answer. And I think that us crypto traders, we're mostly, you know, young, whatever, under 35 or whatever. And I think we need to become better students of history, because if we don't study history, then we're doomed to repeat some of the same accidents and stuff. And we saw that in 2022. It's like recursive lending and like extreme leverage and, you know, borrowing against, you know, endogenous collateral, like with the Luna thing. And just, it was crazy. And it was like, well, if one person read a book about 2007, 2008, like maybe that wouldn't have happened. Or the long-term capital management thing in like 1999. But we people are hard-headed, and everybody's got to learn by doing, right? And that means doing good and also doing really bad. But I also want to move to the CME. While we still have you, I know you guys are now trading options on the CME. This is super important. You guys also launched some CFDs, or contracts for difference. You're trading those. Tell us about this suite of derivative products that you guys are now offering and trading.
Yeah. So the products that we're offering are, as I mentioned, are very much well suited for, you know, institutional participants. The CME was a long project on our side because, first of all, you know, you obviously need to find a clearer, and for us it was very important to get a tier one clearer like ABN AMRO Bank to support our activity there. And right now we're still, you know, in the process of facing or adding more and more counterparties that we can cross block trades with. I think that will continue. Again, the reason it's easier to do via CME, you don't need to have, you know, bilateral ISDAs in place. You don't need to go through, you know, many onboarding chains. You can just be set up and start facing counterparties through regulated venue, and that's kind of was the first step. And then the second and the third step, we've always done options, but we've always done it, you know, on a fully collateralized basis, which is obviously not very capital efficient for someone who wants to have the exposure but may not necessarily want to post 100% of the collateral. So over all last year, we have developed a dynamic margin methodology which allows to be more capital efficient, more flexible, where we can take any collateral, essentially not just fiat stables but also any of their tokens. So that product is more for bespoke, bespoke type of offering. I would say CFDs in the sense are quite similar to perps. It's an open-ended contract, right, where you might not necessarily want to fix a specific tenor or, you know, term in the future. You just want to have exposure whilst it suits you based on your, you know, risk profile as well as possibly, you know, internal model. Some people are very, very advanced. They might be running their own, you know, internal or directional strategies. And then the NDFs that we are offered and the options just allow you to have a little bit more flexibility on the duration, you know, notional underlying collateral. So again, it's a bilateral type of product, OTC type of product, as opposed to, you know, just listed derivatives that would be linked to the offering and product offering on the CME. For us, we see it as a big opportunity and definitely growing space. Again, you know, looking at the FX market and traditional markets, you know, usually the derivatives is a much bigger proportion of the overall market structure. In crypto, it hasn't happened yet. So we think that's where the growth will be longer term.
Incredible. I think that, you know, most people most people outside of the United States really should be like trading these options and derivatives products. Do you see any road for, you know, normal sort of, call it just people, you know, not like institutions or whatever, but like, you know, unaccredited investors, retail trading options and derivatives on crypto in the States. And I know you guys are based internationally. I don't know if you guys operate in the States, but we, you know, things have just, we felt like, you know, we've been, you know, hogtied or whatever, like nobody could trade these things and everybody wants to. So what's the deal? And is there a path forward? Do you think?
Yes. We do ask our partners the same question.
Everybody wants to know.
Yes. Like, well, if you were to list, you know, crypto options, we would definitely support. Yes. That's an ongoing conversation with a few of, you know, very, very large platforms that we support from a liquidity standpoint. So for us, we are keen to build that. I think it will be probably, you know, next phase for us. It obviously would have to be, you know, API driven, because quite often on the other side, you have the demand from, you know, from, as you say, from retail takers who want to trade maybe a specific sort of format. Or, you know, small ticket sizes, kind of large volume. So we definitely, you know, we consider ourselves a company of builders, right? So not even so much a trading company, but a product-driven company. So for us, it will be just another product we will add to our suite if we see there is demand. Right now, almost we feel that there should be demand. And yes, we are nudging, as I said, gently some of our partners, asking them if they're seeing the demand. To me, it would be a logical next step. And I have confidence that it will come at some point in the next couple of months, because it's just something, I think options, from what I understand in the US for, you know, retail users, it's a very conventional product. So it would only make sense to offer it to the retail users as well. But again, we are, you know, institutional only wholesale provider. As I mentioned, we would always be only facing, you know, league counterparties that are then providing it. So it's driven by the demand on their side. Yeah.
Right. That makes total sense. And I think that some of these, I think the registration filing is called a 19B4. And these are going to be options on the Bitcoin ETFs, which we're hoping that those get passed and that, you know, kind of anybody could go into their Interactive Brokers account or their E-Trade account and start trading that, which will be, again, another big rush of liquidity and excitement and volatility. And I think that's probably where you guys will make the most money. Trading those big wide spreads, a lot of activity, lots of volatility. But while I still have you, I really am curious. Just we always like to get bold predictions from our guests, and we've had all sorts of people, and from developers to hedge fund managers to folks like yourself. And we always ask them, you know, do you have any bold predictions for this year, kind of going forward, the next maybe 6 to 12 months? Any one thing, you know, maybe it's ETH flips Bitcoin, or maybe it's we trade some X billions of dollars, or, you know, what's kind of going through your mind?
I'm very bad with these predictions, I have to tell you. It feels like every time I join an industry, something bad happens.
Well, we'll use you as a counter signal then. Whatever you say, we'll just trade against it.
I think it's a good idea. Exactly. I mean, I joined Structured Products Desk in 2008, you know, and then, you know, I joined the kind of Precious Metals Desk, which closed because of, you know, of the Basel II requirements and the balance sheet intensity coming in. I joined crypto, you know, 2021 bull run, started January 2022, and it kind of went sour. So I think should definitely take it with a pinch of salt. I think it will definitely be a fun ride. I think what I find very, very surprising, and I'm learning to kind of overcome my bias coming from, you know, TradFi perspective. I'm so used to, you know, fundamental analysis and, you know, looking at, you know, markets infrastructure from, you know, from a macro perspective. That's where my interests have always been. Whilst I think in crypto, it's very narrative driven, which I initially found very, very surprising. But, you know, again, as a trading firm, we will trade whatever is hot, whatever is traded. If it's a meme coin, we will trade it, right? If it's, you know, a successful NFT project, we will trade it. If it's, you know, DeFi 2.0, we will trade it. So for us, whatever is going to be hot and, you know, kind of, I don't like the word hyped, but unfortunately, that's what many of the projects have to do is, you know, 50-50% of the success is 50% we can contribute liquidity, but the other 50 is them communicating very effectively about it and essentially creating that hype or, you know, building that narrative with a go-to-market strategy. So quite often that's actually what the even exchange is looking at before launching a project is kind of what is the community engagement like, are, you know, how many people are posting, following, and, you know, it's not bots, it's genuine people. So I would say I would actually now listen to narratives more actively. So, you know, I think in terms of even kind of that flipping or sort of some trends is where you can see some changes. So, you know, if in 2023, we've seen kind of the real world assets and the, you know, and the AI and gamify being kind of more, and meme coins, obviously, you know, being very, very heavily driving the narrative. I think 2024 already now we're seeing more of their, you know, DeFi 2.0, you know, deep in type of projects coming to space and being very successful when they launch, as well as, you know, the usual kind of metaverse and NFTs coming back as we've seen this week, right? You know, the Bitcoin halving event, yeah. I think that will contribute a lot to changes in the market. You know, Ethereum restaking again are a big kind of segment of crypto markets. So I think it will be more me following more crypto narratives rather than just kind of trying to predict the future. I think the crypto is just so unpredictable. But yeah, again, kind of going back to that chart that you were sharing and, you know, the chart I mentioned about the reverse correlation between gold and BTC, that is very, very interesting because, you know, in the previous bull cycles, I think the crypto kind of trends were not really correlated to the macro events, but now it's becoming more of the institutionalized space where actually macro narratives are affecting the crypto space, which is a good thing because probably those trends can be easily spotted and predicted in line with the overall overarching macro picture.
Incredible. Well, Katrina, this was certainly an enlightening and just really fantastic episode and interview. And we really are happy that we got to know you and got to know the inner workings of Wintermute quite a bit better. So with that, we will let you go back to, you know, trading the markets and making legendary partnerships. And we hope that you can come back on and talk about any big updates or announcements at any point in the future. The door is always open. But until then, take care. And everybody at home watching, I hope you enjoyed.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for the episode. It was fun to speak to you.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.